listening to NativeTalk.net. Audio files are available online at NativeTalk.net. Now, with a Big Joke a Minute guarantee, we promise for every single minute of airtime, this program will continue to be a big joke. Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@nativetalk.net. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning and welcome to the nativetalk.net radio podcast with Cliff and Brandon this time.
And the actual Brandon.
How did you get here?
I journeyed long and far because the mission was worth the reward. I'm so happy to be here in the flesh, or in the audio version of flesh, whatever that is.
If you want to make comments, you can email us, podcast@nativetalk.net, or visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/nativetalk, Native Talk Radio. Phone lines are open if you want to call and leave us a voice message. That number is 970-278-5791. I got a voice message here.
Did you?
Yeah, wait. Let me, here we go.
Hi, Native Talk listeners. This is Brandon here. Just calling to let you know, I went and visited one of those skeleton key rooms this weekend. You know, those rooms where you try to escape through a series of clues, and I think the people before me took the key, and all the lights are off, and all the employees went home, and I'm stuck here, so I can't make it this week. I'm sorry. I'll try to make it next week. Have a good time. Good luck to you, Cliff.
How did you escape from the escape room?
Well, it turns out it wasn't a skeleton key room. It was just the janitor's closet, and all I had to do was turn the light on and open the door.
I'm glad you escaped.
God, that's such a terrible voice message. You didn't actually play that.
Yes, I did.
Oh, man.
You would have known that if you actually listened to the show.
I'm a busy man, all right? I got better things to do.
Well, I'm glad you're able to be here for this. Now, we got a couple of... listener mails, which if I ever get to, there we go. Sorry, I didn't do anything last week, so I'm a little out of practice. All right.
It's okay, Cliff. We all expect that of you.
So now, do you remember back, I guess it was months and months ago, we were talking about the Nooksack tribe who disenrolled the 306.
Nice dig, by the way.
What?
It's a nice dig. Anyway,
thank you.
Go ahead.
So the Nooksack tribe, you know, they had disenrolled 306 people. They had some issues with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. We talked about that.
Yes. Okay.
So Rick, who is, I know he's at the very least a part of the Nooksack tribe, and I think he works for them.
Oh,
he
okay.
says, we just had our primary election, and the incumbents and the 306 supporters moved on to the general election. We had our general election yesterday. Well, this is old, but, you know, when he wrote this, it was yesterday. And the incumbents won. Our people have spoken. I don't think the issue was ever, like the outcome of the election. I think the issue was that 306 were not allowed to vote. So the fact that they were allowed to vote and they all voted in the incumbents, I think you're right, Rick. The people have spoken, and that's all we wanted.
Right, and that I think is the most important thing, is that you should allow the voices to be heard, you know, whatever
yeah.
they have to say. And if they're all in agreement, more power to you. Absolutely.
Exactly. I never had I don't have a vested interest in the outcome of their elections anyway. I just want them to be fair. That's all. So,
do you think he was attacking you? Do you feel defensive, Cliff?
He was he wasn't attacking. He was very defensive. He wrote us a very angry letter before this.
Okay.
And I was kind of talking to him off the air, and he specifically requested that I not talk about that, so I didn't. But
until now, sorry.
Until
for
this
that out
one,
of
he didn't say that this one shouldn't be talked about. So I'm talking about it now.
Yeah.
Anyway,
sorry.
We also talked about. Discrimination in the workplace and stuff like that. So Rob says, I just got a settlement deal from my last employer because one of my supervisors was discriminating against me as a native, and the company let it happen. So I fought back, and I didn't walk away with nothing. There's also another Native American Indian that is still being harassed. Well, tell that person to stand up for themselves.
I wonder, did he mention in the letter how... or why? Like, what kind of discrimination was taking place?
Not mentioned.
Because I might have mentioned on the show once before, the worst workplace discrimination I got was when, you know, a couple of shop guys, technicians that work on cars, they found out I was Native American. As I was passing by them, they would do silly things like go, or they would put their hand up next to their face and go, how, as I walk by.
Dang it.
The hell?
Teach him, pale face brother, all about red man.
I didn't have the right bank selected.
Yeah, seamless. Anyway, you know, that's, to me, that doesn't seem like I need to fight up and stand up for myself, because I find that to be just people trying to have fun or whatever, right? So I wonder, with this guy, what does discrimination against Native Americans actually look like? Because to me, it just seemed... You know, in my situation, just silly stuff. That can't be what he meant, right?
Well, Rob, I have no idea. He didn't mention it. So, Rob, if you want to clarify, you can feel free to write us again and
I'm curious.
Let us know.
I'm curious what it looks like in real life.
I am too. Well, I read something else about what they were doing up in New York State, but I don't think you were here for that show, so you don't know. Anyway,
Jesus. Jeff, I wonder if it'll be another 6 weeks before Cliff stops making little jabs about my absence.
At least 6 weeks, if not longer. So, all right. Next one. Jeff in Boulder, Colorado, just down the road from me. He's also from Seattle, Washington, so he's got another connection to our tribe there. He says he's talking about, I guess 2 weeks ago, when we had my son Jason join the show. He says, that was gutsy, asking six-year-old Jason, but what a gem. And a terrific job to the host. Why, thank you, Jeff. Thanks
I'm
for
sure
your...
he meant Jason.
He said a terrific job to the host. That's me.
Well, he said that Jason was a gem, so I promoted him. I should have told you, but yeah, he's the host now.
Jeff says, thanks for your podcast. Just learning about it, and I will share and listen frequently.
Thank you.
Now, the next couple is about your absence.
Oh, right.
Okay. Larry,
not again.
Larry in Buffalo, New York says, I enjoy listening to your show, and it's so interesting to hear when six-year-old Jason chimes in. But
so cute.
I haven't heard Brandon on the show in well over a month. Is he still a part of your program?
Well, I'm right here.
Emily in Rapid City, South Dakota. Where's Brandon? Hey, is he okay?
I am doing fine, Emily. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I assume she's wondering where you are. This guy goes by Bear Claw in Anchorage.
Awesome name. I want that name.
In Anchorage, Alaska. He says, I'm glad Brandon does the introductions to the show because he hasn't been on the actual show for a long time. I like his opinions in humor. You should let him back on the show.
Let him back on the show. Yeah, Clifton was so gracious. He let me know that that my presence on the show was desired, and so he did allow me back in here.
Destiny in Columbus, Ohio. Whatever happened to Brandon?
Right here, Destiny. Hello.
And my favorite one, Doyle in Pollock Pines, California. Not too far from you.
I went camping there as a Boy Scout.
Okay, well, Doyle says, I do not normally send messages to podcasts. In fact, I rarely listen to podcasts at all. I prefer music, particularly country music from the 60s and 70s.
Awesome genre.
One of my friends sent me a copy of your recording some months ago, and I've been listening using the internet connections to download your show to my desktop. I like your topics, but your other host, Brandon, usually has good commentary about your show topics. Is there a reason he has been absent? He's a lazy piece of crap. That's why he's...
What? No. Okay, in the last
That's
6
the reason.
Weeks... In the last 6 weeks, I have clocked at least 7,200 miles in my car, if I think about the journey. And, wait, that math is wrong, my Dean.
Of course it's wrong.
It's 3,600 miles. It was 3,600 miles-ish that I've driven in the last 6 weeks. It's been a lot of road trips, lots of Monster Energy drinks, and I've been really busy.
No, he's a lazy piece of crap. That's why
no,
he's been gone.
No, screw your face with a carrot. I have been very busy.
All right. Well,
I've been doing a lot of good things.
Well, 2 weeks ago with Jason, we talked a little bit about learning some things about the tribes of the Pacific Northwest, and I got a lot of extra stuff. So I wanted to talk about baskets. Do you know how the Pacific Northwestern tribes made baskets back in the olden days?
No, but I would guess with reeds that grew next to the water.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the material that they used to build them. But do you know what they were used for?
Carrying water, berries, anything that you want to put in a basket?
Yeah, kind of. But
my generic answer would be to move supplies from one area to another.
Well, sort of, but they were also important as far as like a statement. Okay.
Now,
just like the mats that they used to make, that they would take those in their longhouses, that was kind of the way they would kind of mark their territory. They would hang a mat and you go, oh, okay, this is Cliff's spot. This is Brandon's spot. This is, you know, whoever's. You know what I mean?
I like that. So it's like a place marker that you can make yourself.
Yeah, in front of your door. And then when you need it, you pull it down, you sit on it and stuff like that. So like mats, baskets were a big part of daily life. Some Indian families even had their own family design that they all used while they were weaving baskets.
Oh, okay.
But mostly, women tried to outdo each other with more and more intricate designs and colors.
That's pretty cool.
That's nothing like women of today trying to outdo each other, right?
No. That's nothing the same. And honestly, I think it's just like businesses and competition with each other. That's only good for the consumer. I mean,
so,
I'll take a pretty tricked out basket.
So they would make baskets in the winter months when they were all bored and just kind of sitting around doing nothing. Now, to get ready for the winter weaving, all summer long, basket making materials were collected. So, you know, that's where you get like your secrets, where you get all the different cool colors. They would collect grass, which was used as embroidery thread. So, you know, when you make the designs and stuff like that, certain grasses were collected because of their strength and colors. And some women even hiked high up into the mountains, an incredibly dangerous thing to do, just to collect special grass to make their baskets better than the other women's.
Hey, if that's where it grows, that's where you gotta go.
Roots and twigs needed to be soaked just right. And once the
if you did it too long, they become too pliable and
don't do it enough. It's like too brittle and stuff like that.
It'll start snapping. It has to be the perfect. You have to mess up 100 times to know the perfect way to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why they're like, oh, I see you're having problems with your basket, little 18-year-old.
You're right, nothing like today.
Once the baskets were finished, they were used to store belongings on open shelves, to store food, and used to trade. Basket making was then, and still is, an art. And they had secret family basket making techniques handed down from mother to daughter. So they would be like, you know, how do you do that? I'm not telling.
Just enjoy the basket.
Yeah, so I will continue that up throughout the months as we learn, you know, just a little bit extra about our tribe, about all the tribes of the Pacific Northwest as we go along.
Have you ever tried to weave a basket yourself?
No, but I've bought one at the store.
I had a chance to I was at a summer camp for the Boy Scouts, and they had a basket weaving table, and I sat there for, 4 hours weaving my first basket, and it leaked so bad. you put it in, dunk it in the lake and fill it up with water. It looks like a shower head. It was just pouring water everywhere. So I went back the next day.
You're
and
not
tried
very
again.
Good at this.
No, I went back the next, I was like 13 years old. I went back the next day and tried again, and I made a basket that held water.
Oh, okay. See, practice makes perfect. But well, nobody's perfect, so why practice?
There you go. Good job, Cliff. Round of applause.
All right, man. We're gonna take a quick break. But when we come back, we're gonna talk about an elder who is told she's not allowed to engage in something she's been doing her entire life. So we'll talk about that in a minute when we come back on the NativeTalk.net radio podcast.
Grab a hanky. This one could get emotional.
You're listening to NativeTalk.net.
Our house grief support center's mission is to provide the community with grief support services, education, resources, and hope. Our house, with the support of trained volunteer group leaders, helps those grieving find sweetness in the tears. With your help, you too can become a volunteer and help grieving children, teens, and adults embark on the journey to hope and healing. For more information, visit ourhouse-grief.org or call 888-417-1444.
Hey, this is Steve with thepeoplesammo.com. Do you enjoy the outdoor sportsman lifestyle? We've got the high-quality, reliable ammo you need, from home defense rounds to outdoor enjoyment. So check us out at thepeoplesammo.com, where we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all ammo is not created equal. Visit thepeoplesammo.com, where you can stock up on the quality rounds you deserve and shoot with confidence. thepeoplesammo.com.
The NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon. What started as a little experiment turned into a music monster.
What?
Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the program. I played that Steve's peoplesammo.com spot just for you.
Oh, okay. With the yelling in the background.
Yeah.
First, I was all drawn in by the Predator theme. I was like, what a cool advertisement. I remember this. And then I started hearing the Star Wars yelp.
We had fun making that just because. Yeah, that's my best friend who runs an online ammo shop. So I'm not getting any money for that at all. But
what was it called? People's
the
place?
People, thepeoplesammo.com.
thepeoplesammo.com.
Yeah, so they actually produce the stuff, put it all together, and you know, you can buy ammo for cheaper, and it's really high quality stuff. So we had fun making that when he was here visiting.
Well, right. I want to teach my kids how to shoot a 22 rifle, and so I would love to get my hands on some of that ammo, especially living in California. It's really hard to get simple little ammo just to do target practice.
Well, Steve will send you some. Go visit his website.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to.
All right. Now, have you ever had anybody steal anything from your porch?
From my porch?
Yeah, like you get something from Amazon and somebody steals it. Just takes
it. Not that
it.
I can remember. I've had people steal from me in other places, but I can't remember a time. I'm trying to think, like, did anyone ever, like, steal a statue I have out front? I don't think so.
Well, in Tacoma, Washington, Jeremy Barrow is sick and tired of having his Amazon packages stolen from his front porch. So he got surveillance cameras and he caught the thief stealing from his front porch.
Dirty jerks.
Crystal clear surveillance photos.
Okay? Oh, I thought her name was Crystal Clear. Never mind.
No. So he turned it over to the police and they did nothing with it. No arrests.
What?
They barely even investigated it, which infuriated Barrow even more. So he came up with an idea for something that he calls the blank box. He put a dummy box that's empty on his porch in plain sight, and as soon as the thieves lift it, a 12-gauge shotgun blank goes off.
Holy crap. What?
It's just a blank. There's nothing in it.
I understand, but, like, how does he rig it up? Like, it's inside the box?
I don't know. He calls it the dummy box. So you can ask him. I've got his name. You can probably find him on Facebook or something.
Because I'm wondering, does it go off next to you, or does it go off in the
box? It's, like, underneath it. Think the Unabomber, but harmless. Okay?
Oh, Jesus.
Now the police are saying that what he's doing is completely illegal.
So, is it illegal to discharge a blank in Tacoma?
Well, they say that it's apparently it is. But guess what? No open cases against him, because they say the first guy I did it to, he was so scared he dropped his cell phone in the front yard and I gave it to the cops. Turns out the guy lives 3 blocks away from me.
Right.
But
that doesn't surprise me.
But they still didn't charge him. Okay. Even though they knew. So but guess what? In order for them to try to open a case against Barrow and his blank box, you have to have the thieves go to the police and open a case. And so he's like, that's fine, guys. You can tell the police that you were stealing from my porch, and I'll tell them that I had this blank box, and so now we'll both be in trouble. So either they're both in trouble or nobody's in trouble.
Mutually assured destruction. Either way, get off my property.
Exactly. Barrow says he's caught 20 different thieves in the act at his home with this.
Concedes, wow, that's rampant. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. So he says his not-quite-exploding box is an imperfect solution on a crowded porch of imperfect solutions. So don't steal from this guy. 20 different thieves.
Well, that's awful. You know, that's got to be people who figured out you can just follow the delivery drivers around and just start lifting packages or just sit around in your neighborhood and wait until they show up.
Yeah, I don't have that problem where I live, but this guy's got a great solution. I would love to know how he put that together.
That's awful. I'm still trying to get my head around the fact that there are so many people just running around Tacoma stealing packages off the porch.
Right?
Porches. That's awful.
Seriously.
Because I order some expensive crap sometimes, and I would be really pissed off if someone walked away
too.
And with $200 worth of merchandise.
And eventually, Amazon is going to be like, okay, now seriously, how many times have you reported the same box stolen?
You know, it'd be ironic because if you ordered one of those doorbell cameras that you know sends alerts to your phone when it detects motion, and you try to order that from Amazon to stop the problem, and they steal it.
That would be ironic. All right. Now, do you know where Saskatchewan is?
Saskatchewan. Oh, God. I do, and I can't remember where.
It's in Canada.
Okay. Right?
It's a big region of Canada north of the Montana-North Dakota border. So if you go to Montana, North Dakota, go straight up, that's Saskatchewan. All right?
Okay.
Now, there's a little town there called Regina. That's the name of the town, not the name of the woman. Okay. And
I mean, she has to be really big to be a whole town.
Yeah, she's not that big. So she's been doing something called smudging. Do you know what smudging is?
It sounds like an art technique where you take graphite on a piece of paper and rub it around.
Well, let's talk about this first, okay? So smudging is a form, it's a common act that indigenous cultures do. It's like a ceremony. Okay. So what you do is you take plants like sage, sweetgrass, cedar, and you slowly burn it to create smoke. Kind of like think incense.
Right. Okay? I had seen a couple of members of our tribe burning these collections of grasses.
All right. And then they take the smoke, as the smoke is kind of slowly wafting up, they spread it over your face and your head like you're washing with water, but you're like washing it with smoke.
Okay. That's what I saw them doing too. You can't see this motion with my hand, but they were doing this. I mean, obviously the radio can't. Clifton
yeah,
can,
yeah.
But they were doing that, and then they were doing this and going like
that's
that.
Smudging. Exactly. Yeah, okay. So before we pray, we first smudge. So that way our prayers go up to the Great Spirit, says Elder Sidney Kay from the Kawakaktus First Nation. Sidney Kay is who's the elder there, says smudging is it's a way of prayer for indigenous people. It's kind of like how Christians maybe fold their arms, or Catholics do the cross, or right. Muslims might bow on their prayer rug. This is the way they do it. Okay.
Oh, I saw that. I was 6:00, 6:30 in the morning. I stopped off to toss something in a trash can, and there was a bunch of people at a hiking trail, like 5 or 6 people pointed east at like 6:30 in the morning. And I'm like, you guys must have had to start driving at like 5 to get here. Holy moly.
They're dedicated, man.
They must have timed
man.
It perfectly.
And do you think that's okay?
Of course. They weren't disturbing anybody.
The natives say that this is part of us. Indigenous people know what smudging means. We believe in our smudge. It's our spiritual way. Problem is, the woman who's doing this, okay, her name is Nellie Ryder. Nellie Ryder has been doing this for, basically her entire life. And she is in a rental property. Now, are you aware of the phrase, rules are rules?
I've heard it once or twice.
What do you do when you are engaging in an act, which is not illegal, but it goes against the rules of wherever you are. Like, for example, I can own a gun, but if I walk onto a university campus, their rule is you don't come on university campus with a gun, whether you have a concealed carry permit or not. This is a no-gun zone. Don't come here. Should I say, screw it, I'm going to go on anyway? It's my right to own a gun, but...
Are you actually asking me what I really do in real life?
I'm asking you what you believe. Okay, I'm asking you what you believe. If you have a right to own a gun, but there is a rule in place that say you don't bring a gun on our property, whether that's a university,
any movie theater, any private owned land,
and they have it posted up clearly. No, that is not allowed here. What do you do?
Yeah. So I say, now you're asking me a different question, but what I believe in is people should follow the rules in place, even if you don't agree with them. And if you don't agree with them, you need to work on changing them so that the rules better fit you. But what I actually do is I make a choice. I decide I can follow the rules and go by to get by or whatever, or I can break the rules. And if I break the rules, if I, in your example, keep that gun with me because I'm scared for my safety and I want to keep it to protect me, I'm not trying to hurt anybody, I'm just carrying my gun on campus. If you make that choice, you better be prepared to accept the consequences that come with breaking the rules. Okay. And you have to consider that when you're making the choice to break the rules. So what I do in real life, I consider it. Like, here's an example. I have a little vape pen and I bring that into areas where there's no smoking. And I smoke my vape pen in areas where there's no smoking. I do it discreetly and where people can't really see me even though I'm in that area. You know, I try to take measures to conceal my rule breaking. But if somebody caught me, I own up to it. It's what you do when you're a rule breaker. It's what you should do anyway.
Okay. So you're willing to accept consequences here.
If you choose to break the rules, yes. But if what I believe in is people should just follow the rules, even though I myself don't do that.
So Nellie Ryder, she's been living in this duplex for 2 years, all right? Now, over the summer, a new property owner took control. So the place was sold. I mean, it's an investment property. So they sold it, and they got a new owner, all right? But she was told that nothing would change in her lease, and she wouldn't have to sign a new one. Okay, so I want you to look at what she received here. She got a notice on her door because she's continuing to smudge the way she's been smudging. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
So she comes home.
Are you going to read that out?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Okay. So she gets this notice on her door. It's dated December 5th, 2017. As you are, and I love this when they post up. Like for everyone in the, in the neighborhood, but you know, it's only for you and you're what? Such a passive.
They have to send it to everybody. Yeah.
Such a passive aggressive way of doing things. But she says, the property manager says, as you are all aware, there's no smoking allowed on the property. This means no smoking or creating smoke indoors of any kind, including cigarettes, marijuana, vape pens, etc. This also means that smudging is not allowed indoors. Smoke is smoke, and it creates the same issues no matter what it's used for. It's also expected that everyone in the residence be respectful of others with regard to smell of any kind and noise of any kind. Playing music, singing, slamming doors, playing the TV loudly, or rolling stuff across the floor is also unacceptable. It's expected that you all consider how your actions will affect the other people in the building and treat each other respectfully. There's no reason why this is not possible. If anybody finds that this isn't possible, then that person should consider finding another place to live. Your cooperation in this matter is expected and appreciated. Feel free to contact me with any questions you may have. Sharon Williams, property manager. What would you do?
My big, big problem is that we in this country have the right to practice our religion.
Okay.
So if you're not going to allow me to practice my religion or spiritual beliefs in my home because they involve smoke, you have to provide a place near my residence that I'm allowed to do this. It needs to be a place that is equally as comfortable as my home, I need to have a place to sit. It needs to be warm. It needs to be sheltered from the rain. You must provide me a place to do this because it's part of my religion or heritage or spiritualism or whatever it's classified under. As an American, you have that constitutional right to do that. Do you not?
Well, you've got freedom of religion. So, but that's not going to be what you just described is not going to be in the Constitution. It could be a rule. And is that a rule in, because we're talking about Canada here.
Oh, whoops. Forgot it was Saskatchewan.
Yeah. So
Constitution doesn't really apply there, does it?
No, it doesn't. But I understand what you're talking about down here. But here's the key is they don't have that rule in the Constitution. They say you've got a freedom of religion. But if your local state or municipality or, you know, whatever, if they say that, or if you have a federal law, you know, that's been passed by Congress, that's another issue. Okay. But what you described is not in the Constitution, but it may or may not be a law. It depends on where you are.
What I would do in this situation is I would first gather the facts.
Because you're thinking of a workplace thing, you know.
Well, clearly I don't have enough facts. So first I would gather the facts. Then I would present them.
Good first step.
Yeah. Then I would present them under the guise of you have to give me a chance to do this. I need to be able to participate. I do this my whole life. This is part of my heritage. You have to let me do this. And I would be like, provide me a place. If I can't do it in my apartment, give me a place outside that I can do it. You know,
okay.
Do they have a patio for people to smoke cigarettes? Can I use that? You know, like I don't know.
Well, and then from what I understand, it's a duplex, so there probably is. But what if she wants to do it in her bedroom? Who wants to pray outside? I mean, some people, but shouldn't you have the choice to do that or not? I think so.
I mean, possibly, but I mean, rules are rules. And that last line of that woman's notice kind of said it. If you don't agree, find a new place to live. And so that brings me to my next step. I would find a new place to live, but before I do, I would do a social media scorched earth policy and just publicly shame the crap out of this place.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And
I would spend my next 2 months photographing, like I would pay my rent. I would photograph every angle of the house.
I got a copy of the letter. So she's doing kind of what you described there.
That's exactly what I would do. I would find every detail I could and squeal as loud as I could so that everybody knew who this woman was and where her property is and why she's doing wrong by me. And then I would leave.
Well, and they better let her out of that lease.
Hey, she got a notice on her door saying find a new place.
There
so
you go. She says when she found that note, she says, I was very shocked and absolutely confused. She says, this goes against my rights as a human being. Now, she's an elder from the Carry the Kettle First Nation, about 80 kilometers east of the city. So, you know, she moved into the town, easier to find work, you know, stuff like that. And she says that it means that, you know, it says it's not allowed indoors, basically. Okay. She says it goes against her rights as a human being. She's lived in the same half of the two-unit duplex for almost 2 years, and this was the first time that she's ever been told about a no-smudging rule. So she was not told about this before. They told her, hey, don't worry, nothing's going to change, and then all of a sudden, uh-oh, it is changing.
Well, did she read her lease? Did it say no smoking? I mean,
she signed
it. It says
no smoking. It says no smoking, but she's like, I'm not smoking, I'm smudging.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but it's still creating smoke.
So when Sharon Williams, the property manager, was asked about this, she said, hey, smoke is smoke and smudging is smoke. So too bad.
If I was, you know, when I was a kid, I used to love burning paper. Like it was my favorite thing to do. I would set paper on fire. And then what I loved even more was I learned if you blow on the flame and the paper's burning, you can just blow on that ember and it just eats the paper up. Right. If I like doing that in my kitchen, should that be allowed? No, you should not be burning a piece of paper just to watch it burn in your kitchen if you live in an apartment. It's a bad idea. Don't do that.
I get that. Well, she went to a Native American lawyer, Saskatoon-based human rights lawyer Larry Kowalchuk said, hey, regardless of the tenancy agreement, the Saskatchewan Human Rights Code protects the freedom of religion, which is what you're talking about, and the Charter of Rights and Freedom trumps all. He says, I think this is a violation of freedom of religion of an Indigenous person. It's a religious practice. It's fundamental and an important aspect of the Indigenous religion. Now,
and that's the biggest difference against my last example of me just burning paper in the kitchen for no reason. That's entertainment and fun for a child. It's not a religious ceremony. This holds so much more weight.
You ready for the twist?
Okay,
there's like a twist to this. There's a twist to this story. Okay, in her house, there is and always has been a wood-burning fireplace.
What?
Smoke is smoke, though, right?
So, what? She's allowed to burn fires.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my God. Oh my God. You're kidding me.
No. I saved that one for the last.
Yeah. That makes every argument from the property owner null and void. What the hell are you talking about, woman?
When Sharon Williams was asked about that, she hemmed and hawed. And said, well, I wasn't aware of that. And I also, I wasn't on the job when she rented the house. And I'm going to have to review the rental agreement before commenting any further.
Oh, that whole gather the information step. She skipped right over that.
Yeah. So, I think she's got a case here.
Yeah, I would say so. I think that anyone in their right mind would be like, the hell, property manager, what are you thinking here?
She's thinking she's got it all figured out and she's a moron.
She apparently never visited the property.
Oh, I'm sorry, I name called. I was told this week on Facebook that I shouldn't call 18-year-old dummies.
Well, you shouldn't just call a person a dummy just because they're 18.
No,
I'm
not talking about a specific person. I mean, in general, 18-year-olds are dummies. Weren't you? Wasn't I? We were all dummies.
Okay, but Brittany wasn't, our younger sister Brittany.
Okay, there are always precocious examples. Exceptions to the rule. But
okay,
in general, I think I'm pretty safe saying 18-year-olds aren't the most intelligent people out there, especially with money.
Okay, but You're going to find idiots who are 60 also, and you're going to find people who are financially savvy at 18. And so you can't say just blanketly that 18-year-olds are idiots. That's a bad choice of words. You should be like, most 18-year-olds are idiots, and then you're safe.
Fine. Freaking. You know what? Thank you for listening today. That'll do it for us.
You're welcome.
We'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net. Phone number, if you want to leave comments about why I'm a dummy, you can. 970-278-5791. We hope you share the show with your friends. Send them to our website, like us on Facebook, and have a great day. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
The NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon. Armed, dangerous, and off our medication. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.